You're listening to Highland Radio.
Hello, good morning. You're very welcome along to this Saturday's edition of Weekend Edition, a busy programme for you between now and 12 o'clock. We're going to have reaction to the council's decision to close parts of Sleaf League at the peak of the tourist season. John Creedon speaks to us about his new RTE programme, Four Seasons in One Day, which focuses on changing weather patterns. Paddy Casey's in the region to play the Stendhal Festival of Arts. We'll hear what he's been up to. We'll speak to Donegal athletes taking part in the kidney transplant games, and of course that big game this afternoon, Donegal v Armagh in the All-Ireland Senior Football Quarter Final. We'll look forward to that game. You can text the programme now, 086 7700 555, or call us on 074 91 25000. Yvonne's waiting to take your calls now. But first, we're joined in studio by Dahi Ramsey, manager of On Green on Theatre in Letterkenny, just to discuss some of the stories that made the news this week and what's making the headlines in the papers today. Very good morning to you, Dahi.
Thank you, Greg. Good morning.
Thank you very much for coming on the programme. Obviously, people familiar listening to you on Sean's programme, but it's nice to have you on Saturday as well.
Thank you very much.
Get it's a weekend shift out of you.
Yes, yes.
What a week it's been locally in terms of news, and I think the biggest story, no doubt, and one I never thought we'd be coming back to so soon, and that was the floods at Letterkenny General Hospital. It seems the facility escaped extensive damage, but to see that amount of flood water, even in the car park of that building, 1 year on from those incredible floods of last year, it was unbelievable.
Yeah, I think everyone was kind of in fear that the same thing was happening again. I think that was, you know, looking at social media, it was being shared very quickly on Facebook and Twitter. You know, it was out there. People were talking about it. And everyone was terrified, really, that the same thing was going to happen again, because, you know, I think that there was a lot of criticism that it was built in a hole. You know, that was the general criticism. And then they rebuilt it in the same spot, you know, and then you see it coming down. But I think one of the things about it was that it seems to have bypassed, because not much happened to the hospital. Mm. What seemed to have bypassed was the huge flood in Remilton,
where
there was a lot of damage done there. You know, and I know the community centre there and the houses around it. You know, there was a lot of damage there, and I think that got slightly overlooked.
It did indeed. And some of the pictures coming out of Remilton were shocking. People's houses, and there was water literally flowing through houses. And it wasn't just there, even, you know, around the outskirts of Letterkenny, a lot of businesses and a lot of homes severely damaged by the weather. But it's funny, we're going to be speaking about changes in weather patterns later on in the programme. Mm. But at the time of the floods last year, we were told, I think it was a once-in-a-generation downpour.
Yeah.
Now we have two.
Yeah.
So we're going to have to find answers, because the point has been made, and it made quite well, that do we want a facility that we don't know can be open on any given day, dependent on the weather? Like, it's not for an emergency department, it's not where you want to
go. I think the hospital has been having well-documented staffing problems, which has been closed in certain areas as well. And then if it rains, can you not, you know, go to it? It's kind of crazy, really. It's too much money. It's too important. You know, it's the only hospital between here and Sligo, you know, for us in the south. I know Alt na Gaeltacht is another option, but that has never seemed to be sorted out that well. So it's crazy, really. Yeah.
And I noticed too, the HSE in a statement released last night, Barry carried some of it on the news there. They said they've put in some remedial measures. I mean, it's a digger digging a trench in a field, you know. I mean, it looks well on paper, but if you go down and have a look at what it is, it seems just a little bit basic, really, that that's where we're at, to protect the hospital, digging trenches in the field.
Well, I'd wonder, I mean, can they not just build a big reservoir, you know, just on that field in front of it? I don't know. I don't know who owns the field. I don't know.
Hopefully, you know, people with more knowledge in terms of that. But, I mean, I know exactly where you're coming from, because a lot of it seems common sense. Because I was down there, and at the front of the building, you know, there was two grates. Now, I'm not, you know, the sort of drainage grates.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not sure if that's what's solely responsible for taking any water heading towards the front door. But you could tell clearly with a massive, massive deluge that these two things, and maybe there was five or six of them, I don't know, I only saw two. This is not adequate.
Yeah. I was actually driving around the hospital roundabout at 7 o'clock that evening, which was in at least a foot of water, and that was the first I knew about it.
Yeah.
But the drains couldn't take the water. They couldn't take the volume. You know, it was clear, like, and people were out opening the manhole covers. But it was clear, you know, there's just, it was a river.
I think there's a fundamental problem with not only Letterkenny, but towns right across the country and the county. And it's about planning. Because if you think of Letterkenny, if you were to take an aerial view of this place 30 years ago, you know, you've got all these fields and natural places for water to go and flow and seep into the ground. Now it's all sealed, it's concrete, it's tar, and you're almost, you've created like this almost massive concrete bowl, and where's the water going? And if there isn't adequate drainage, these problems are going to keep rearing their head. I mean, the situation you mentioned earlier on, you know, I think that's more freakish, but I think the problems that this town and other big towns with perhaps arguably poor planning in the past are going to face is, you know, it's going to be more ongoing.
So someone was saying to me, with, did I face any flooding where I live? Because I actually live at the bottom of a hill. You know, and I was saying, not at all, because it's a field above me. It's completely a large field, which they use for silage and for grazing. So it soaks up. It's like
nature takes care of it.
Yeah, it soaks up. Now, and I was thinking about it. I was thinking, if they put an estate above me and everything's concrete, you know, where does the water go then? The water has to come to me. You know, so that would be a very different situation. And I presume that that's what's been happening in a lot of situations. It's the build-up, it's the concrete, it's the tarmac. You know, water is nowhere to get down into the ground.
And it will always find its way to its lowest point. That's
Yeah, exactly.
Well, thankfully, anyway, the statement released today said, look, the cost in terms of damage is minimal down there. The ED's up and running, and the staff, it has to be said, the staff are always praised, but they were very quick to respond. And just one other thing while we're on the issue of the hospital. Obviously, yesterday there was concerns raised about oncology services. The HSC sent us through a press release overnight saying that oncology services are going to be maintained at the current levels. I know Deputy Pádraig McLoughlin raised that issue. It doesn't go far enough for him. But at the very least, we know the oncology services are going to be maintained at the current level. That's the commitment from the HSE. Now, on to today's papers. It's a mixed bag on a weekend. You get something, you know, you get some more light-hearted stuff, some more serious stuff. Public sector pay, or where do you want to start, actually, Dave?
Well, if you want to start with public sector pay, we can. As a private sector worker, sadly, you know, in the theatre, we work in a very grey area. We can have the worst of both worlds, I like to think, at times, you
That's
know.
Glass is half empty there, isn't it?
I think the situation we're in, whereby the council own the building and, you know, they grant us and stuff, I think works very well for the council. It's very efficient for taxpayers. And as a taxpayer, I'm all for that kind of thing. Sadly, we seem to lose out, you know, sometimes with public sector workers. Yeah, there's talk that they're going to get a lot of their pay back. That they've lost over time. There wouldn't be an election coming up in the next year or two, would there?
There is that sense. I mean, you can, you see, the funny thing is though, in one half of our brains, I think we know there's an election coming up, and that's perhaps what it's about, because it's the second half of the cycle. But the other half of our brains think, well, if we're going to get something out of it, maybe that's fine.
Absolutely. But we're private sector workers, will we?
No.
No. I think the numbers I was reading them earlier, it's around 280,000 in the public sector now, whereas it was over 400,000. So obviously giving them the money back isn't the same amount of money as it was.
Yeah.
You know, so there's obviously a little room to play for there. I mean, you know, people deserve, you know, cost of living rises, allowances. You know, it's been 8 years, I think, is it? 7 years, certainly, that everything's been held down. I think people deserve it. Prices have gone up. Taxes have come in. You know, we have the water charges coming now, you know.
Oh, don't get me started on that, sir. But we can talk about that too, if you like. The thing with the public sector issue, for a long time it suited the powers that be, I believe, to pitch one against the other.
Yeah,
because how can you force the hands of the unions? How can you force the hands of the public sector? Well, you get the private sector on board. You say that, oh, these are jobs for life, blah, 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 blah. But take Donegal County Council for an example. It's very easy to criticise it, but you've got far less people doing pretty much the same job. Less pay. And, you know, to all intents and purposes, with the income that's coming in, they're doing a very, very good job, and perhaps we shouldn't lose sight of that. And
absolutely.
Maybe I mean, we do sometimes.
You know, I interact with them on pretty much a daily basis, and there are a lot of good people doing a lot of good work out there. And I think that they're probably, you know, in terms of the size of the county and the resources they have to give, they wouldn't be resourced as heavily as a lot of other counties out there.
Big new cities like Toronto, Canada and others keep wetlands clear or near, says this caller. So, I mean, the texter. So, you know, there's not that I can see the argument there that that's where it
makes
soaks
sense,
up that water. 086 77 00 555. Keep the texts coming in. 07491 25000. Elsewhere in the papers today, Dahi?
I thought this was an interesting one. It's kind of a GAA, which obviously you'll be dealing with today a lot. But it's an interesting one because I think it's a change in mindset here. Meet GAA to reject 400,000 cash offer by a wind farm company.
Ooh.
And hot on the heels of the Flower, which obviously opens this weekend in Sligo, rejecting Shell's money because of concerns over the whole Shell to Sea campaign down in Mayo and how a lot of musicians felt about that. You know, it's an interesting one. I don't think I've come across this before, that people reject sponsorship money because they feel it's somehow tainted. And these are energy companies we're talking about. That's an interesting, for
it's
me,
interesting.
Mindset,
is it a dangerous path to be going down, I wonder? Because you are, in some way or other, making a political statement, aren't you?
You are. You are. I think one of the things is, the thing about sponsorship is, like, people attach themselves to your brand.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the benefit. That's what they're paying for.
Yep.
So your good name, Meath GAA's good name, the Fla's good name. Now, I mean, the Fla has such a reputation. I mean, you know, what's it worth?
Mm-hmm.
You know, they attach themselves to your name, but you're also attached to them. You know,
okay,
and
well,
that's an interesting
So is it not a la carte then? Because, you know, if you listen to the likes of the HSE and other organisations, they despise this tie-in that the likes of the GAA and other sports have with alcohol,
yeah,
for instance,
yeah,
and the amount of people. We know the problems it causes in homes, not to people who are affected by it. So it's okay to take that money, but wind farms, that's not okay. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, so, as I say, it's muddy water, do you know what I mean?
If you it are, certainly is.
You
it
can't be a la carte on this, can you?
Where do you start and where do you stop? Yeah. I think people probably are more sort of involved in the idea of, you know, this wind farm company, which apparently is controversial, you know, than they are in, you know, a drink sponsor.
Yeah.
You know, we all understand drink, but it is part and parcel of
it. And I'm
playing
devil's advocate there and I understand.
Yeah.
And I do understand there is a difference, but, you know, it's just, I'm thinking, as you say, this is one of the first times, so what's next? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Is it going to be to do with fracking or is it going to be to do with, you know?
Yeah. Which again is in the news as well, you know, whether that's going to be allowed. And
on the issue of the wind farms, it was an interesting week in that Alan Kelly, the Environment Minister, officially notified Donegal County Council that he's proposing to overturn the changes to the county development plan. He really was pretty critical of the local authority, suggesting that, you know, this is, well, you can't do it effectively. You didn't give it proper consideration. You did not take on board my views, that being Alan Kelly. You didn't take on board the national development plan.
Mm.
It's a bit of a mess, isn't it? Because you have thousands and thousands of people making submissions to our county development plan.
Yeah.
These quite strict changes taking place, and now we've national intervention. People out there are wondering, well, what is the local authority for?
I mean, it's a good question. I mean, during the local elections, there was a lot of information going around, because obviously a lot of the councillors kind of promise a lot and say they're about a lot, but there's very few things that councillors actually have an influence over, but planning is one of them.
Mm.
You know, and then if that's going to be taken away from them, you're starting to go, what's left?
Yeah.
You know. I think roads, planning, water.
Water's gone.
So roads and planning, I'm not sure. I'm sure some of the councillors listening will be on now to tell me what I'm missing.
I don't know. You know,
what else is there?
If you, particularly some of the new councillors, you do speak to them, and I think a few of them have had a bit of a shock because, you know, you hear, oh, the council's no power, no this, that and the other. And it does have some power. We're not saying it has none whatsoever. But then they try and raise an issue at a council meeting and there's so many hoops you have to do, jump through to get it on. And they go, well, what are we actually doing here? What's this? You know, so.
Yeah. Obviously, there's the budget, which is the big one that they like to do all-night marathons to keep reporters, you know.
That's when they get their own back or something.
Yeah. Feeling like you're in a war zone or something for the reporters, you know.
086 77 00 555. Just in relation to the flooding, Caller says they spent a lot of money on the hospital after the flood. Apparently, 1,000 a week for a digger. It astonishes me that people focus so much on this digger, considering it's going to cost 45 million euro to get the hospital back up. And it's this digger that seems to. I think the digger was there to carry the sandbags to the front door. And I'm not defending it, but it's funny that that's that story. I think it first appeared in the Donegal News that a lot of people.
How does that work? Because I agree with you. It's been a huge focus, but. Do we have an on-call digger driver all the time? Does he sit in the hospital? Does he drink tea? What does he do? Or she, indeed. I don't want to be sexist about it.
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure. And there was a figure allocated for it, and then it was it was spread over a number of weeks, and that's where this 1,000 came from. There's definitely a digger down there. It was on scene. There was
The digger worked.
Yeah.
It worked.
It did. But anyway, they go on to say, apparently 1,000 a week for a digger, so it wouldn't happen again. And when it did happen again, they tried to start the digger, and there was no petrol in it. What was the guy doing with it every day? Well, I mean, obviously, I saw the digger in action. I'm not sure if they had issues starting it to begin with, but we'll take that comment for what it is there.
Yeah.
There's no excuse for flooding at that level where the hospital is. There'd be an excuse if the hospital was down about sea level, and whoever the builder was, they should have seen this. There should be a problem with water. There would be a problem with water, sorry. There needs to be some serious questions asked of some very irresponsible or responsible people. That comes in there from Joe. And that's, you see, there's an investigation and inquiry going on. And that's what people want. They want answers. Mm. Who is responsible? Because I made this point during the week. The insurance company is taking most of the load for last year's flooding. But no insurance company in their right minds, if the same thing happens again, are they going to put their hands in the pockets?
And this is an interesting issue, I think, for the homeowners in surrounded areas. And particularly, I know, in Remelton, where I was in one of the houses on Friday, actually looking at what had happened. And, like, they got insurance, but do they get insurance again? And as I understand it, the insurance company can exempt floods. They can say, well, insure your house, but not floods. Mm-hmm. Whereas in England, there's a law that says they have to carry it. It's on all insurance. But they just brought in a law and said it's in the insurance policy.
I think you've flagged a story that is going to be coming up, because it's definitely happened down the country where people are living in houses vulnerable to flooding, and there is a national flooding policy, and it all kind of gets tied into that. But you're perfectly correct. When they go to renew their premiums, are they going to be through the roof where you'd say, is it worth me having it, or will they get them at all? I mean, that's probably coming down the road. What's next? What else is in the...
What's next? One very, very dear to my heart.
Gareth Brooks?
see, 20 quid cheaper a ticket in America, but
I'll just read that out.
We'll pass on that.
We'll pass on it, because I was going to read that out later.
Rural areas abandoned in broadband plan. I got my letter this week to say the National Broadband Scheme, which... I personally, as someone stuck on it.
Now, can I ask you, because...
Yes.
Do you mind me asking what you're paying as part of the National Broadband Scheme at the moment?
Yeah, it's about €24.
Right, €24 a month.
20 plus tax.
And you're guaranteed a minimum...
Rubbish.
Yes, but you are guaranteed it. What is your minimum download that you're supposed to be
able to get? Well, you see, you're not, because this is the interesting thing. Because they can have a congestion rate, which is the amount of people on it, of 18.
Yeah, that's the content ratio.
So you're guaranteed, so you're guaranteed a megabyte, but then there can be 18 people on it. So divided by 18... And you're back to, you know, dial-up was faster. There are times when I long for dial-up again.
Yeah. It was reliable.
It's that slow. Middle of the night, you know, when everyone around me has gone to sleep, 3 a.m. about, lovely. Mm. You know, it works really well. And that's it.
So really...
As long as the wind's not blowing, you know.
So it's useful for maybe checking your tweets or Facebook and downloading email. Beyond that... You would be too frustrated opening up pages and what have you at the busy...
Oh, yeah, you sit and wait for pages to go. You can't stream, you know. Mm. What is the modern broadband experience isn't there, you know. But they're now doing away with the National Broadband Scheme.
Mm.
So we're now going to pay through the nose for the same service. So it's getting no better, you know. And I'm less than 2 miles from an exchange. My neighbours... have internet, like broadband, through their telephone lines. I can't get it.
Have you ever been told why?
Yes. Yes, I fought a battle for a long time, Greg. I spent a lot of money trying to get decent broadband because a lot of my work could be done from home.
Yeah.
If I could get online.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm sure in the modern world, in the way it is, that, you know, when I built my house in 2005, it wasn't as much a consideration. But I'm sure my house is worth a lot less because it doesn't have decent broadband.
Yeah, these things are all that are considered.
But it's more for us to use that we really wanted to be connected. And I spent a lot of money putting in the connection, doing everything. And simply, the quality of the line that Aircom, who are the provider of all the lines, the quality of line that Aircom has put as far as my neighbours isn't good enough to extend to me. I'm the loser.
Yeah.
You know, all my neighbours can have it except me.
And there was this fantastic initiative, this tie-in between Vodafone and ESB.
Yeah.
Which allows that every single house that is connected to the ESB network will eventually get super fast broadband. And it could have been an opportunity to look after people in rural areas and focus maybe on the...
Yeah.
And it's the big towns once again.
Yeah.
And don't get me wrong, I know if you're listening to Letterkenny, I know it's a hugely important town, but there's quite a good... technological infrastructure there.
Yeah.
So maybe just give the rural areas a chance in this scheme first and then move it into the big
areas. The tier two, we, you know, 50 megabytes, e-fiber, whatever, you know, Letterkenny isn't stuck. Letterkenny's doing quite well. I mean, it's part of a wider thing that's happened since the downturn is the rural areas in many ways have been abandoned. Mm. It's all about urbanisation. All the jobs coming in have been Dublin. To the country. There seems no idea of dispersal of jobs. You look at areas like Gweedore, where all the jobs have gone, there's been no initiative to replace them.
Yeah.
And things like broadband, things like access, roads, infrastructure, are the things that can allow people to live in the rural areas. Because at the moment, there's so much remote working for these technology companies. You know, but you can't do that.
You see, the thing we have to start, I think we need to do here now, because if you speak to people down the country, we're whingers up here. You know, and yet we have everything to be whinging about.
Yeah.
I think we need to sort of refine how we're getting this message across, that we're not coming across as whingers, but we are. You know, we have the same entitlements as other areas of the country.
Yeah.
But how do we relate this information with it, without it sounding like, oh, they go again in Donegal morning? But I mean, as you say, you know, we are supposed to be on the up in the economy, but are we going to go up as quickly without proper roads, without, you know, without proper technology and what have you?
I think it's actually, you know, the Irish rural way of life is decimated now. And actually, I think there's an ideological thing. Do we support that? Or do we just go, everything's for Dublin at this stage? Everything's for the urban area. But see the Windsors down country? What I say to them is, take the train up to Donegal and have a look at it.
And enjoy Sligo while you're on it.
Yeah, that's my answer.
What else? I can't believe we're getting through the time so quickly, don't we?
Yes.
In fact, I tell you what we'll do. I'm behind on a commercial break.
Right,
we'll do, we'll take a quick break. We'll be back with more from the papers with Dahi Ramsey in just a couple of minutes. A caller says, I was in casualty yesterday. The digger was working. I know they had problems with it, but it was working yesterday. Thank you very much for that. I'm a member of the public and the lift has been broken in the hospital for the last 2.5 weeks. Who's going to fix this? I have a family member in the hospital and I'm sick of the queue in the hospital every time we visit. Keep your texts coming in, 086-77-00-555. You can call the show on 074-91-25000. Dahi Ramsey, what's next?
I suppose something caught my eye today because I've actually been noticing it on the roads. It's a new car licensing. Climbs 50% year on year with 142 plates.
Mm.
So the number of new cars being bought is going up. And I suppose that'll be one of the things the government point to say there's more money about. You know, I would say the people with money always had money and still have money maybe.
And but I think they're just perhaps people with money are starting to spend it now, which is one of the major problems, because there was always a minimum of 60% people working. A lot of those in quite good. Well, why was that money not filtering into the economy? Yeah. Because people were sitting on it for fear of the future of the unknown, weren't they?
Well, absolutely. And I think one of the things about the boom originally was, because we were all spending money, was we didn't necessarily have the money.
Mm.
We just thought there was more coming behind for us. So I can spend that. I can take that loan because I'll be able to pay it. And then when people get the fear of, hang on, there isn't more money coming behind, are there cuts coming, are there taxes, you start holding on to your money a bit more.
Yeah.
But I've noticed it on the roads. So the amount of 141 DL and 142 DL that I've seen around is incredible. And... Oh, just for later on, you were saying you're going to have a segment about what annoys you about drivers' driving habits, not indicating.
Well, I think
it's not an optional extra. You know, the bulb won't wear out. Indicate. Let me know where you're going.
If you're
going
to have one, I'm going to have one.
You know,
people not switching on their lights during the day.
Ah, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You think sometimes that they believe it's connected to their ESB network and that there's actually a cost for this.
Drains the broadband. Yeah.
Switch your lights on, even if it's just the low lights, you know. It just, everyone can see each other. It's compulsory in some countries.
Yeah.
And then we're coming into the winter. I'll be driving up and down for work in dusk or darkness. And the amount of people don't have their lights on, I can't understand.
Yeah. Yeah, no, definitely.
Even if it just makes your dashboard look nice because it's lit up.
See the indicator. I know that driver knows where they're going. That's fantastic. You know, they know they're about to do a U-turn on a tiny roundabout. Yeah. That's great. Let me know.
Please
let me know. As I say, the bulb isn't going to wear out that quickly.
All right, what's next? Might be the last piece here if you want to pick on something there.
Thank you for letting me have that whinge. I feel better for that. An interesting one, I've seen this coming for a long time, and a lot of people have been talking about this, is social services alerted to over 1,500 cases involving young asylum seekers. Mm-hmm. This is in the Irish Times today. It's the direct provision, which is a nightmare. And there's been a long, long history of people in the know saying that Ireland is going to get sued to the hilt for the way they've treated asylum seekers in this country. And there was a great documentary made about Mosny called Sea View a number of years ago, which looked at the lives of people in this direct provision. Now, I think it's fair enough to tighten up asylum seekers in how they're processed when they come into the country. But what's happened in this direct provision, which is meant to be a very temporary thing, is it's going on for years and years and years. So you have people who are, you know, coming here as very small children. They're going through our entire education system and they can't access third level education. And their parents aren't allowed to work. So people are coming here and they're not being allowed to work. People who desperately want to work are not being allowed to work. And they're being kept, very deliberately it seems, in poverty. Or it looks deliberate. Maybe it's not. Maybe it's just an administrative system.
It's like, do you think it's almost like a staring contest? If we don't support you, maybe you'll, in inverted commas, go home?
I think there's certainly an element of that you don't want to make your country look too attractive. I mean, certainly we had a lot more, there's certainly a lot less people coming now than when there were stories out there of Ireland being an incredibly rich country. But at the same time, these people are coming from situations that are so much, much worse than here that, you know, it's not that much, you know, it's not going to put the majority of them off, you know. And they are, I mean... You know, I know we don't necessarily want everybody suddenly landing at once. It's very hard for a society to adapt to that, and we don't have a huge population.
Well, we don't have a huge population because we're in Canada, we're in Australia, we're in Britain.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We're economic migrants. And I think there has to be some reality of that. Mm. We've been going to other countries for generations. For other people to come here who are coming from worse, we go to places that are economically better off. If they're coming, but most of these aren't economic migrants. You know, it's about horrendous war-torn social situations.
Shaping,
you know,
genital mutilation and,
you know, I think
genocide.
We are a very compassionate race. We are a very compassionate nation. You know, we give hugely to appeals for famine, etc. You know, I think, you know, we should be showing that a little bit more.
Mm. Right. Nice one. Thanks,
Thank
Dahi.
Much,
what's your plans for the rest of the day? You mentioned you might go surfing.
I'm hoping to get out there surfing. I haven't been out in a couple of weeks.
It's not down at the hospital, is it? No.
No. Although I did see a video of some guy in the... I don't know if you saw that going around social media with the guy.
I don't know how it happened, but I think it was a coincidence perhaps, but we have a picture up on our Facebook page of a lifeguard in full regalia.
Yeah, well,
I don't know how that happened. And hopefully they weren't there for anything terribly serious, but it was just some light relief in what was a very serious situation. Where are you going to go surfing?
I think Fannad today.
Lovely.
I think Fannad, which is great. Surf's pumping, so everybody who has a surfboard, get yourself to the beach. It's low wind, surf's pumping. And I think it is one of the things, just to hark back to what we're talking about rural areas, surfing is one of the things that's transforming, kind of, certainly Bundoran is transformed by it. It's, you know, and it is one of the things we can...
And kayaking's becoming much bigger here, and sightseeing.
I have friends coming up from Dublin now this weekend for kayaking, and they're absolutely, as people say, stoked that the surf is pumping.
As the kids say. Dahi Ramsey, listen, thanks so much for coming in. It's been a pleasure having you in.
Thank you, Greg.
And we'll chat to you again. That's Dahi Ramsey there, who is the manager of On Green on Theatre in Letterkenny. Now, I want to give a mention to something. Now, it's a bit of short notice, but if you want to get out and get some fresh air, what better way to do it? There's a 10K walk taking place on Tory Island. It's in aid of the Irish Guide Dogs for the Blind. It's taking place today. Registration is at 12:45 at the Harbour View Hotel. It's €10 per adult, €5 per child, and €25 per family. The walk starts this afternoon at 1:30. Now, there are refreshments being laid on by Patricia and Dawn, Sean Doherty at the Harbour View Hotel. And there's music too by Patsy Dan Rogers. That's the King of Tory Island. Paul Rogers and friends there as well. Now, there's a special reduced boat fare out to the island. €20 turn for walkers. The boat leaves Maharoti Pier at 11:30 and arrives on Tory at 12:20. And the last boat back to the mainland's at 6 p.m. So that's a fundraiser for the Irish Guide Dogs for the Blind. And I appreciate it might be a little late for some, but who's to say that maybe that'll just suit you and you might want to go and take part. Now, it is at 10:40, time to go out back on the streets. Yvonne McFadden's been out with a microphone asking about what annoys people about other drivers and what are Donegal chances this evening. Back in a couple of minutes.
What are your pet hates about drivers on the road today?
Particularly people who drive at 30 miles an hour. When the speed limit is, what, 100?
People not indicating.
People pulling out in front of you.
It happened to us twice on the way in.
Really?
Yes, right out in front of you in a corner. Yeah, going too slow in front of you. Coming up the road for Strabane at 30 miles an hour.
When they come right up the side of you or cutting in front of you in a lane around the roundabout?
Going through roundabouts and stopping in the middle. Right. That's what annoys me. People should be taking it one at a time and letting the traffic flow more so, you know what I mean?
Okay. What's your predictions of the game on Saturday between Donegal and Armagh?
I'd say Donegal will probably win it because they've got a good defence. So, yeah, I'd say they'll do well. They'll give them a game anyway.
I'd say Donegal will beat them by about 3 points.
Oh, Donegal, definitely. 1-7 to... 4 points.
1-7 to 4 points. We'd take that, wouldn't you? 086-7700-555. Just for fun, text in your predictions for the game this afternoon, Donegal versus Armagh. I'll keep them to one side, and sure, whoever gets closest will announce the name next week, and your prize will be you're the biggest GEA fan, the most knowledgeable GEA fan. So call us on 0749125000 if you want to tell us what annoys you most when you're out and about in the road, or indeed if you want to make your prediction for the scoreline and winner of this afternoon's game. That's Donegal versus Armagh, of course. Or you can text us on 086-7700-555. Still loads to come on the show between now and 12 o'clock. Just want to say a couple of requests or play a couple of requests. Hi, can you say hello and good luck to all the Mary's Meals group who are walking today from Letterkenny to Ballybuffet. This is day 3 of the 9-day charity walk from Malin to Knock. Well, best of luck to all of you, and suppose motorists, keep an eye out for the walkers there. They'll all land at their destination safe and well. For Joanne and Pat Coyle, who are getting married today, that comes in from Dennis Doherty. Joanne and Pat Coyle, another one in for you. Enjoy your big day from Jerry, Kathleen and all the family. And hi, can you please play a request for my sisters, Shannon and Samantha Buchanan? They're 18 today, and wish them a very good birthday from all the family. And could you play some Garth Brooks, please? Well, we might do that, you know, before the end of the programme. Who's to say? I'm going to read this out. Now, we've talked enough about Garth Brooks, haven't we? But maybe it might make feel those who didn't get to go along to the concerts a bit feel a bit better, because Garth Brooks fans in the US paid almost €20 less for tickets to the country singer's shows than Irish people were being charged. Tickets for stadium concerts in Atlanta and Georgia were advertised for around €42. However, for the first 5 ill-fated Croke Park gigs, punters here were being charged €65 in some cases. A spokesperson for Mr. Brooks said the singer has always sold his tickets at a below average price when most shows charge €100 per person. But they're even further below. Okay, it is a 10:45. We're going to be talking to John Creedon about a new programme coming up on RTE, focusing on our, what appears to be, our changing weather. Just a reminder for you, text on anything to 086-7700-555 or call us on 074-91-25000. (laughs) There's no doubt that the weather is a national obsession and there's a sense that our climate is changing. This was brought into stark contrast with the recent floods at Letterkenny General Hospital this week. Last year's floods were put down to a once-in-a-decade downpour, yet just 1 year on, a similar downpour caused more flooding, not just at the hospital, right across the county. Thankfully, this time causing far less damage. Creedence Four Seasons in One Day starts this Sunday on RTE1 at 6:30. And I'm delighted to say that John Creedon joins us now to talk about the programme. Very good morning to you, John.
And you too, Greg. Thank you so much for having me on the show. It's a part of the world that I'm familiar with. Happy Days and Rathmullen and up in Finn Park following Cork City against Finn Harps and all the rest of it. But being as I am in the deep south, the first thing that strikes me about your introduction is I saw with horror those pictures from Letterkenny Hospital on a day when we were basking in about 33 degrees heat. It was positively hot and dry in Cork on the very same day, and it kind of underlined what in many ways is the theme of this three-part series. It's the predictability of Irish weather in general. And we look to the future and kind of ask the question, where to for the Irish weather because of global warming, climate change and so on.
And it's interesting you say how different the weather was where you were. At one time, you only had to go 20 minutes down the road and it was dry and then we had this awful downpour. It's almost like there's microclimates. I presume they've always existed.
Well, there are, Greg. That's the truth of it. And I mean, as Gerald Fleming points out to me on the series, they constantly get hammered at Met Aaron for getting it wrong. But if they say there's going to be rain in the southwest this morning, it may be on my side of the hill, but not on your side of the hill. So we have not, people talk about the Irish weather as though it's some kind of generic thing. But in fact, we have lots of different microclimates. I mean, we did a piece in Garnish Island and Fota Island similarly. They're both, technically, they're subtropical. You can grow plants in that part of Ireland that you can't grow elsewhere. Wexford in the southeast is the driest. It's the place to grow strawberries. It's the place to grow cereal. Donegal has different weather, bigger seas than they see on the east coast. So we have a huge amount of variety, not only within the island, but within a week. And I think that's probably the reason why we talk about the weather all the time, because it changes. If you're from Arizona, you plan a picnic for Saturday, everybody shows up, you have your picnic. Here you're looking out the window saying, I'll meet you 2:10. No, 2:45. God, it's like, so it is so changeable to begin with.
And so, there are so many questions, John. I hope over the course of the three programs we get some answers.
Well, maybe not the answers we're looking for. Look, to be honest about this, Greg, this actually began as a kind of a beginner's guide to the Irish weather. It's partly because people are asking questions, what's happening to the Irish weather? Why do we get so much rain? Is it always wet in the west? Because of those, it's almost like a ladybird book of Irish weather is how it began. So, but as we went further into it, there were themes began to emerge as we researched it. One of them was, why do we get the weather we get? Why is Ireland the way it is? And it is quite unique. It is, as they told us in school, if we were listening, the North Atlantic Drift or the Gulf Stream. And we went to Florida to examine that. And that was fascinating because I'm bad now on numbers, but there are several million cubic meters of warm water flowing to the Atlantic per second. Mm. And while most of that heads out into the mid-Atlantic and it circulates there, there's a bit pairs off the top, which we now call the North Atlantic Drift. And it drifts past Ireland, losing temperature all the time. But it's enough to keep the waters off the southwest coast particularly, but up along the west coast of Ireland, milder than what you might expect, say, at a similar latitude. So Newfoundland gets more snow, Newfoundland gets more cold weather. We're constantly kind of regulated to some degree, so we rarely get... I know I'm talking now to people who live in the Highlands in Donegal, and they're saying, what are you talking about? But by comparison, for our latitude, we get relatively mild weather. Mm. And that's why we get so much rain. It's our prevailing winds are from the west. They come across the Atlantic, the cleanest air on the planet, perhaps, coming up from the Amazon and the Gulf and everything else, but full of bloody water. And so what we discovered about the future, if we can expect, when I say more of the same, I mean with a capital M.
So you mean we can look forward to hot rain?
Well, you know what? You have it in a sentence there, yeah. Because we went to the European Space Agency to investigate where the weather was going in Ireland. We went to, we spoke to academics in Florida. We spoke to Ireland's finest, like Gerald Fleming, like people like Professor John Sweeney from Maynooth. And what they're all saying is there is no debate about climate change. It is changing.
So how John do... Sweeney, and I'm sorry, John, to cut across you. And I know that they have science to back that up, but throughout the course of history, we have had, you know, the Ice Age and different... I'm sure this county long before and this country long before you and I roamed the planet saw different types of weather. So how do we know this is not the natural cycle and this is a man-made issue?
Well, clearly it's a man-made issue because of we have the science to measure these things now, that hole in the ozone layer or carbon footprint or carbon emissions since the Industrial Revolution. And that's only, what, 150 years ago or something. That's only a blip, really, in terms of the planet. But in that 150 years, and increasingly in the last 50 years, we see the industrialization of huge countries, China, India, and just like ourselves, they want to get ahead. Everybody wants a better lifestyle for their family. But really, maybe we should be asking ourselves, and I mean us, I mean me, I should be asking myself, is it my retirement fund that's important? Is it this generation of farmers' land that's important? Or is there a bigger picture? Because there is no doubt about it, climate change is taking place. It will impact upon Ireland in a way, Professor Sweeney told me, in a way that we should be, I won't say glad of, but we should be slightly relieved that Ireland will not fare worst out of this.
So but you mentioned, John, there that this is a global problem. And even if we take individual responsibility or even collective responsibility as a country of Ireland to this problem, you mentioned countries like China that have massive populations. And if they weren't on board, for instance, well, then our efforts may be futile.
Well, I'm not a political creature, Greg, but I'm more concerned about the industrialized world, the already industrialized world. In America, the carbon footprint is very, very heavy. It's not a very popular issue. It is in California. It is in Denver, Colorado, wherever you have environmentalists. Of course, it's top of the agenda. But most people, and we've seen this, dare I say it, in the last week with the with the Russian sanctions against imports of Irish produce. Immediately, and I can understand why any farmer with children would say, hey, hang on here, what's happening to my cattle prices? So I can understand, absolutely I can understand that. So I'm not preaching to anybody. I've learned this for myself, that I must be more sensitive to it, that anything I can do to reduce my carbon footprint is all I can do, no more than I can stop what's happening in Gaza.
It's,
I can't stop the Israelis, I can't stop Hamas, but I must be polite to the next person I meet, and that's where I interface with the world. So It's not actually a preachy series. As I said, it's really a beginner's guide to the weather. We have folklore in there. We investigate the annals of Ulster, which is kind of humorous in ways, what people wrote back in the 400s about the Irish weather. We look at things. There's a few farming stories in there that are particularly interesting. There's some forestry. We've looked at how the recent storms, we have a lot of storm footage in there from the last couple of years, but we look at how storms, for example, have affected forestry and new technology that's out there now to actually help farmers and forest owners to protect their crops and to monitor their tree crop. So there's a lot of stories like that. We did a piece with Chagask as well about runoff and about... But one of the things about the increasing water, and I thought this was quite interesting, John Sweeney, the professor emeritus of from Maynooth, said that geographically we're relatively well placed for this, that we will get warmer, wetter weather, there is no doubt. There are rising sea levels, so we will see damage. Less so on the west coast, funnily enough, despite the big seas. He said that we have very craggy, rocky, the people in the west, just like the landscape and the peninsulas, is well used to taking a battering. So he said, funnily enough, the west, despite the big seas, will actually fare relatively well. He said it's the east coast, despite the tame Irish Sea, the east coast, a lot of it is built on chalky cliffs and chalky surfaces. And he named towns. He said that, you know, you're going to have trouble in Arklow, you're going to have trouble in Cork City. So
and it opens up questions then about flood prevention and how we plan for that, I suppose. John, it's going to be a fascinating program. When you talk about the weather, you're guaranteed to have a massive amount of viewers. You've a lot to pack in the three programs. The first one, this Sunday evening at 6:30 p.m. on RTE1. We look forward to it, and it's been an absolute pleasure speaking to you.
Likewise, Greg. And give my best to all the gang in Rathmullen and tell them all I said hello.
Okay, you've just done so. John, thank you so much.
Thanks, Greg. God bless.
Oh. Okay, quick look at the weather forecast, I suppose, following on from our convo there with John Creed. And if you have any comments on that, of course, keep them coming in to 086 77 00 555. That's the text line. Or Yvonne is waiting to take your calls on 074 91 25000. Mostly dry with sunny periods for the start of the day. Those showers will become more widespread for the afternoon. Some will be heavy, possibly thundery in places. Temperatures 16 or 17 degrees in moderate southwest winds, becoming light in the afternoon. This is about driving and what annoys people. Was going to Derry on Tuesday, met a car on the wrong side of the road. When the car did see me and pull over, the driver was using a mobile phone. I hate that, says a caller. And just generally on the GEA, caller says, I want to express my anger at the GEA's deal with Sky TV. It's left that loyal supporters who cannot afford for various reasons travel to Dublin to see the quarterfinal. They're left with listening to the match on radio or else go to the pub. Even if we do have Sky, unless you have the sports channel, you can't see the match. The weekend has highlighted the sellout of our national sport for cash.